Vasitva vasati nile malam amuchya kanchani reje svalam kvito lipto mahindra iva varanaha Vasidva vasasi nile malam amuchya kanchani vijesvalam kvito lipto mahindra iva varana Oh, don't worry about it. It's Canto 10, Chapter 65, verse number 32. Translation by Srila Prabhupada. Lord Balaram dressed himself in the blue garments and put on the golden necklace. Anointed with fragrances and beautifully adorned, he appeared as resplendent as Indra's royal elephant. This is Lord Balaram with the gopis. His gopis in Vrindavan. Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, manifests unlimited opulences. This word opulence is the best we can come up with in English. Everything. That exists, everything that's real, everything that's imagined, all expansions of Krishna's opulences. And he expands through his agents, his potencies, and his self-same Vishnu Tattva expansions. He has his three primary potencies. These are energies, but they're controlled by persons, transcendental persons. His Ladini Shakti, his Samvit Shakti, and his Sandini Shakti. Lord Baladev is the ruler, the manifester of Krishna's Sandini Shakti. His potency for existence. For everything, all the places where Krishna resides, those places, the dhammas, all spiritual places, and all material places, these are manifest by the potency of Lord Balaram. All the paraphernalia that Krishna uses for his pleasure in these places are the manifestations of Balaram. So he's called Shesha. Krishna is everything. Eka Advatiya Brahma. The Absolute Truth, one without a second. And he's that second that doesn't that there isn't supposed to be. Krishna is everything, and Balaram is everything else. Shesha, the remainder. Description that when the Lord is appearing as Narayan, Ananta Shesha is supplying his bedstead in the form of his own body, his slippers, his umbrella, all his personal paraphernalia are manifested by Balaram. But Krishna's paraphernalia is not just an umbrella, a pair of shoes, a bed. You know, that may be all I have, but Krishna's paraphernalia is everything. All the universes and all the inhabitants of those universes are the paraphernalia and entourage of Krishna's pleasure. That is all manifested by Balaram. And he's also present in person in Krishna's pastimes. In many of his incarnations, maybe not all of them, Baladeva is personally present in one form or another. He's there with Narayan as Ananta Shesha. Of course, in the Chaturvyuha, he is... Sankarsana, Baladev, yes. In Ramalila, he's there as Lord Ramachandra's brother, Lakshmana. And in Krishna's Leela, he's there in his original form, Balaram, the son of Rohini. We may not read as much about Lord Balaram as we read about Krishna. Because Krishna, especially in his pastimes with his friends, Balaram is the most prominent friend, but he's just one of the bunch. And he doesn't directly, he's there with Krishna as his constant companion, but not exactly all the time. When Krishna goes off to be with the gopis, it doesn't fit the mood for Balaram to come along. So he's not there when Krishna is performing, enjoying his Madhurya Leela pastimes. Therefore, we may see, we read through the 10th canto of the Krishna book, we're looking for glorification of Balaram. We may not find so much overt, specific glorification of him by himself. We see him with Krishna. And his pastimes, his own pastimes, may seem less prominent. But that's just because Krishna, his pastimes, especially his pastimes with the gopis, with his parents, are so prominent that even the pastimes of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Sankarsana, become eclipsed in the presence of that. Or at least in Srimad Bhagavatam, Srila Shukadeva Goswami had limited space at his disposal, and he couldn't adequately describe the glories of Lord Balaram. Just wasn't room for it. We read some parts, we'll read a little bit from the Krishna book. Elsewhere, some other literatures, you can probably find more specific description of Lord Balaram. You can find glorification of Balaram and of Lord Nityananda, especially in the Chaitanya Bhagavat of Vrindavan Das Thakur. Vrindavan Das Thakur was a great devotee of Lord Nityananda. He calls himself the last of the devotees of Nityananda. He may have actually been the last person to be initiated by him. Krishna's Kaviraj lists 43 branches of the Nityananda tree, and Vrindavan Das Thakur is listed as number 43, the last. So he can claim he's the last. He means I'm the worst, but he's the last but not the least of all the devotees of Lord Nityananda. And he, especially in the first two chapters of the Chaitanya Bhagavad, goes at great length to describe the glories of Lord Balaram. He's Vyasadeva himself, appearing again to fill in some of the things that there wasn't room for in Srimad Bhagavatam. He makes a great effort to prove philosophically that Lord Balaram has his own Rasalila too. Krishna is so famous for his Rasalila, Baladeva has his also, and he has his own gopis. And for those who doubt it, Vrindavan Das Thakur presents Shastric proof. Anyway, we have the description in Srimad Bhagavatam of Lord Balaram's enjoying with his gopis. We'll read that chapter. Just to set the mood, I wanted to read a short excerpt where Balaram shows his strength. And although he's unlimited, sometimes his temper has a limit. And we'll read about that. Hold on a second, I'd find it. This should be the previous chapter. Okay. Where's the marriage of Anivruta's son? Hold on a second, I saw it just a few minutes ago. Gee, maybe it's at the end of the previous chapter. I'm sorry? No, it's here. Where Krishna knocks out the king of Kalinga, Balaram knocks out the teeth of the king of Kalinga. What chapter is that? The marriage. Whose marriage is that? Sambha's marriage, where is it described? It was a chapter just before this Lord Baladev visits Vrindavan. But the problem is it's at the end of another chapter. Give me a minute here. Okay. 64, that's the story of King Riga. Hold on a second, we'll find it. You think it's forward? It's forward, that's why. Marriage of Sambha. Okay, it's not before, it's after. Now I can find it. Well, actually, I came to something else. Okay. The great sage Narada, this is from the Marriage of Sambha. The great sage Narada immediately carried the news to the Yadu dynasty that Sambha was arrested and told them the whole story. The members of the Yadu dynasty became very angry at Sambha. At Sambha's being arrested, rather. And immediately, and improperly so, by six warriors, now with the permission of the head of the Yadu dynasty's king, Ugrasena, they prepared to attack the capital city of the Kuru dynasty. Although Lord Balaram knew very well that by slight provocation, people are prepared to fight with another in the age of Kali. He did not like the idea that the two great dynasties, the Kuru dynasty and the Yadu dynasty, would fight amongst themselves, even though they were influenced by Kali Yuga. Instead of fighting with them, he wisely thought, let me go and see the situation, and let me try to see if the fight can be settled by mutual understanding. Balaram's idea was that if the Kuru dynasty could be induced to release Sambha, along with his wife, Lakshmana, then the fight could be avoided. He therefore immediately arranged for a nice chariot to go to Hastinapura, accompanied by learned priests and brahmanas, as well as by some of the elderly members of the Yadu dynasty. He was confident. All I'm doing is, can you find where the king of Kali gets his teeth knocked out? Accompanied by learned priests and brahmanas, as well as by some of the elderly members of the Yadu dynasty. He was confident that the members of the Kuru dynasty would agree to this marriage and avoid fighting amongst themselves. As Lord Balaram proceeded toward Hastinapura in this chariot, accompanied by the learned brahmanas and the elderly members of the Yadu dynasty, he looked like the moon, shining in the clear sky, amongst the glittering stars. When Lord Balaram reached the precincts of the city of Hastinapura, he did not enter, but stationed himself in a camp outside the city in a small garden house. Then he asked Uddhava to see the leaders of the Kuru dynasty and inquire from them whether they wanted to fight with the Yadu dynasty or to make a settlement. Uddhava went to see the leaders of the Kuru dynasty, and he met all the important members, including Bhishmadeva, Dhritarashtra, Dronacharya, Duryodhana, and Bhaklika. After offering them due respects, he informed them that Lord Balaram had already arrived at the garden outside the city doors. the leaders of the Kuru dynasty, especially Dhritarashtra and Duryodhana, were very joyful. Duryodhana is a disciple of Balaram. We're very joyful because they knew very well that Lord Balaram was a great well-wisher of their family. There were no bounds to their joy on hearing the news, and so immediately they welcomed Uddhava. In order to properly receive Lord Balaram, they all took auspicious paraphernalia for his reception in their hands and went to see him outside the city door. According to their respective positions, they welcomed Lord Balaram by giving him in charity nice cows and arga, an assortment of articles such as aratrika water, sweet preparation of honey, butter, etc., and flowers and garlands scented with pulp. Because all of them knew the exalted position of Lord Balaram as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, they bowed their heads before the Lord with great respect. They all exchanged words of reception by asking one another of their welfare. And when such formality was finished, Lord Balaram, in a great voice and very patiently, submitted before them the following words for their consideration. My dear friends, this time I have come to you as a messenger with the order of the all-powerful King Ugrasena. Please, therefore, hear the order with attention and great care. Without wasting a single moment, please try to carry out the order. King Ugrasena knows very well that you warriors of the Kuru dynasty improperly fought with the pious Samba, who was alone, and that with great difficulty and tactics you have arrested him. We have all heard this news, but we are not very agitated because we are most intimately related to each other. I do not think we should disturb our good relationship. We should continue our friendship without any unnecessary fighting. Please, therefore, immediately release Samba and bring him, along with his wife, Lakshmana, before me. When Lord Balaram spoke in a commanding tone, full of heroic assertion, supremacy, and chivalry, his statements were not appreciated by the leaders of the Kuru dynasty. Rather, all of them became agitated, and with great anger they said, "Hello! These words are very astonishing, but quite befitting the age of Kali. Otherwise, how could Balaram speak so vituperatively? The language and tone used by Balaram are simply abusive, and due to the influence of this age, it appears that the shoes befitting the feet want to rise to the top of the head, where the helmet is worn. We are connected with the Yadu dynasty by marriage, and because of this, they have been given the chance to come live with us, dine with us, and sleep with us. Now they are taking advantage of their privileges. They have practically no position before we gave them a portion of our kingdom to rule, and now they are trying to command us. We have allowed the Yadu dynasty to use the royal insignias like the whisk, fan, conch shell, white umbrella, crown, royal throne, sitting place, bedstead, and everything befitting the royal order. They should not have used such royal paraphernalia in our presence, but we do not check them due to our family relationships. Now they have the audacity to use, they have the audacity to order us to do things. Well, this is enough of this, of their impudence. We cannot allow them to do any more of these things, nor should we allow them to use these royal insignias. It would be best to take all these things away. It is improper to feed a snake with milk. Since such merciful activities simply increase his venom, the Yadu dynasty is now trying to go against those who have fed them so nicely. Their flourishing condition is due to our gifts and merciful behavior. And still they're so shameless that they are trying to order us. How regrettable are all these activities. No one in the world can enjoy something if the members of the Kuru dynasty like Bhishma, Dronacharya, and Arjuna do not allow them to. Exactly as a lamb cannot enjoy life in the presence of a lion, without our desire, it is not even possible for the demigods in heaven, headed by King Indra, to find enjoyment in life, not to speak of ordinary human beings. Actually, the members of the Kuru dynasty were very puffed up due to their opulence. Kingdom, aristocracy, family tradition, great warriors, family members, and vast expanse of empire. They did not even observe common formalities of civilized society. And in the presence of Lord Balaram, they uttered insulting words about the Yadu dynasty. Speaking in this unmannerly way, they returned to their city of Hastinapura. Although Lord Balaram patiently heard their insulting words and simply observed their uncivil behavior, from his appearance it was clear that he was burning with anger and was thinking of retaliating with great vengeance. His bodily features became so agitated that it was difficult for anyone to look at him. He laughed very loudly and said, "It is true that if a man becomes too puffed up because of his family, opulence, beauty, and material advancement, he no longer wants a peaceful life, but becomes belligerent toward all others. It is useless to give up such a person, to give such a person good instruction for gentle behavior and peaceful life. But on the contrary, one should search out the ways and means to punish him. Generally, due to material opulence, a man becomes exactly like an animal. To give an animal peaceful instructions is useless. And the only means is argumentum ad baculum, argument from the stick. In other words, the only means to keep animals in order is a stick. Just see how impudent the members of the Kuru dynasty are. I wanted to make a peaceful settlement, despite the anger of all the other members of the Yadu dynasty, including Lord Krishna himself. They were prepared to attack the whole kingdom of the Kuru dynasty. But I pacified them and took the trouble to come here to settle the affair without any fighting. Still, these rascals behave like this. It is clear that they do not want a peaceful settlement, but they are factually warmongers. With great pride, they have repeatedly insulted me by calling the Yadu dynasty ill names. Even the King of Heaven, Indra, abides by the order of the Yadu dynasty. And you consider King Ugrasena, who is the head of the Bhojas, Vrishnis, Andakas, and Yadavas, to be the leader of a small phalanx. Your conclusion is wonderful. You do not care for King Ugrasena, whose order is obeyed even by King Indra. Consider the exalted position of the Yadu dynasty. They have forcibly used both the assembly house and the Parijata tree of the heavenly planet. And still you think that they cannot order you. Don't even think that Lord Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, can sit on the exalted royal throne and command everyone? All right, if your thinking is like that, then you deserve to be taught a very good lesson. You have thought it wise that the royal insignias, like the whisk fan, white umbrella, royal throne, and other princely paraphernalia not be used by the Yadu dynasty. But does this mean that even Lord Krishna, the Lord of the whole creation, and the husband of the goddess of fortune, cannot use this royal paraphernalia? The dust of Krishna's lotus feet is worshipped by all the great demigods. The Ganges water is inundating the whole world. And since it is emanating from his lotus feet, its banks have turned into great places of pilgrimage. The principal deities of all planets are engaged in his service, and they consider themselves most fortunate to take the dust of the lotus feet of Krishna on their helmets. Great demigods like Lord Brahma, Lord Shiva, and even the goddess of fortune and I are simply plenary parts of his spiritual identity. And still you think that he is not fit to use the royal insignia or even sit on the royal throne? Alas, how regrettable it is that these fools consider us, the members of the Yadu dynasty, to be like shoes and themselves like helmets. It is clear now that these leaders of the Kuru dynasty have become mad over their worldly possessions and opulence. Every statement they made was full of crazy proposals. I should immediately take them to task and bring them to their senses. If I do not take steps against them, it will be improper on my part. Therefore, on this very day, I shall rid the whole world of any trace of the Kuru dynasty. I shall finish them off immediately. While talking like this,
can you come to the juicy part?
I'm coming to it. While talking like this, Lord Balaram seemed so furious that he looked as if he could have burned the whole cosmic creation to ashes. He stood up steadily and, taking his plow in his hand, began striking the earth with it. In this way, the whole city of Hastinapura was separated from the earth. Lord Balaram then began to drag the city toward the flowing water of the river Ganges. Because of this, there was a great tremor throughout his Hastinapura, as if there had been an earthquake, and it seemed that the whole city would be dismantled. When all the members of the Kuru dynasty saw that their city was about to fall into the water of the Ganges, and when they heard their citizens howling in great anxiety, they immediately came to their senses and understood what was happening. Thus, without waiting another second, they brought forward their daughter Lakshmana. They also brought Samba, who had forcibly tried to take her away, keeping him in the forefront with Lakshmana at his back. All the members of the Kuru dynasty appeared before Lord Balaram with folded hands, just to beg the pardon of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Now, using good sense, they said, "O Lord Balaram, you are the reservoir of all pleasures. You are the maintainer and support of the entire cosmic situation. Unfortunately, we were all unaware of your inconceivable potencies, Dear Lord, please consider us most foolish. Our intelligence was bewildered and not in order. Therefore, we have come before you to beg your pardon. Please excuse us. You are the original creator, sustainer and annihilator of the whole cosmic manifestation. And still, your position is always transcendental. O all-powerful Lord, great sages speak about you. You are the original puppeteer, and everything in the world is just like your toys. O unlimited one, you have a hold on everything. And like the child's play, you hold all the planetary systems on your head. When the time for a dissolution comes, you close up the whole cosmic manifestation within yourself. At that time, nothing remains but yourself, lying in the causal ocean as Mahavishnu. Our dear Lord, you have appeared on this earth in your transcendental body, just for the maintenance of the cosmic manifestation. You are above all anger, envy, and enmity. Whatever you do, even in the form of chastisement, is auspicious for the whole material existence. We are offering our respectful obeisances unto you, because you are the imperishable Supreme Personality of Godhead, the reservoir of all opulences and potencies. O Creator of innumerable universes, let us fall down and offer you our respectful obeisances again and again. We are now completely surrendered unto you. Please, therefore, be merciful upon us and give us your protection. When the prominent members of the Kuru dynasty, beginning with Grandfather Bhishma Dev down to Arjuna and Duryodhan, had offered their respectful prayers in this way, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lord Balaram, immediately became softened and assured them that there was no cause for fear and that they need not worry. For the most part, it was the practice, this is another paragraph about the dowry given to Lakshmana. I'll skip over that. Lord Balaram triumphantly returned to Dwarka, where he met with many citizens who were all his devotees and friends. When they all assembled, Lord Balaram narrated the whole story of the marriage, and they were astonished to hear how Balaram had made the city of Hastinapur tremble. It is confirmed by Shukadeva Goswami that the site of Hastinapur is now known as New Delhi, and the river flowing through the city is called the Jamuna, although in those days it was known as the Ganges. From authorities like Jiva Goswami, it is also confirmed that the Ganges and Yamuna are the same river flowing in different courses. The part of the Ganges which flows through Hastinapur to the area of Vrindavan is called the Jamuna because it is sanctified by the transcendental pastimes of Lord Krishna. The part of Hastinapur which slopes toward the Jamuna becomes inundated during the rainy season and reminds everyone of Lord Balaram's threatening to cast the city into the Ganges. Thus ends the Bhaktivedanta purport of the second volume, 33rd chapter of Krishna, The Marriage of Sambha. So these are among the leelas that Lord Balaram shows in his association with Krishna, the Yadus, and the other, and earlier in his Vrindavan pastimes, the wonderful association that Balaram had with the Vrijabasis. He has a brotherly and friendly relationship with Krishna. Of course, he's the same person, but even in his expansions, the Supreme Lord has relationships with himself in different rasas. So Balaram is the older brother of Krishna. He's got a little bit of parental affection, as an older brother does. He's got that brotherly relationship. He's a friend of Krishna, the chief of Krishna's friends. So he's very prominent. He's always there, almost every single day, when Krishna goes out to the forest to play with the cowherd boys. Did you find that pastime? Where is it? 61. The numbers might be different. What's the name of the chapter? Or what is it about? Okay, that means it's not in this volume, it's in the third volume.
It's called the genealogy of Krishna.
Really? Ah, I got it. 190, okay. This must be at the end of this chapter. This is a short excerpt. This is, who's getting married here? Okay. Prajumna, the eldest son of Krishna, born of Rukmini, was Cupid himself. He was so beautiful and attractive that the daughter of Rukmi, namely Rukmavati, could not select any husband other than Prajumna during her Swayamvara. Therefore, in that selection meeting, she garlanded Prajumna in the presence of all other princes. When there was a fight among the princes, Prajumna came out victorious, and therefore Rukmi was obliged to offer his beautiful daughter to him. Although a far-off enmity was always blazing in the heart of Rukmi, because of his being insulted by Krishna's kidnapping of his sister, Rukmini, when his daughter selected Prajumna as her husband, Rukmi could not resist consenting to the marriage ceremony just to please his sister, Rukmini. And so Prajumna became the nephew of Rukmi. Besides the 10 sons described above, Rukmini had one beautiful daughter with big eyes, and she was married to the son of Kritavarma, whose name was Bali. Okay, I think he was mentioned in that other chapter. Well, that's who he is. He's the son of Kritavarma. Although Rukmi was a veritable enemy of Krishna, he had great affection for his sister Rukmini, and he wanted to please her in all respects. On this account, when Rukmini's grandson, Aniruddha, was to be married, Rukmi offered his granddaughter, Rochana, to Aniruddha. Such marriage between immediate cousins is not very much sanctioned by the Vedic culture, but in order to please Rukmini, Rukmi offered his daughter and granddaughter to the son and grandson of Krishna. In this way, when the negotiation of the marriage of Aniruddha with Rochana was complete, a big marriage party accompanied Aniruddha and started from Dwaraka. They traveled until they reached Bhojakota, which Rukmi had colonized after his sister had been kidnapped by Krishna. This marriage party was led by the grandfather, namely Lord Krishna, accompanied by Lord Balaram, as well as Krishna's first wife Rukmini, his son Prajumna, Jambavati's son Samba, and many other relatives and family members. They reached the town of Bhojakota, and the marriage ceremony was peacefully performed. The king of Kalinga was a friend of Rukmi's, and he gave him the ill advice to play with Balaram and thus defeat him in a bet. Amongst the Kshatriya kings, betting and gambling in chess was not uncommon. If someone challenged a friend to play on the chessboard, the friend could not deny the challenge. Sri Balaramaji was not a very expert chess player, and this was known to the king of Kalinga. So Rukmi was advised to retaliate against the family members of Krishna by challenging Balaram to play chess. Although not a very expert chess player, Sri Balaramaji was very enthusiastic in sporting activities. He accepted the challenge of Rukmi and sat down to play. Betting was with gold coins, and Balaram first of all challenged with 100 coins. then 1,000 coins, then 10,000 coins, 10,000 gold coins. Each time Balaram lost and Rukmi became victorious. Sri Balaram's losing the game was an opportunity for the king of Kalinga to criticize Krishna and Balaram. Thus the king of Kalinga was talking jokingly and purposely showing his teeth to Balaram. Because Balaram was the loser in the game, he was a little intolerant of the sarcastic joking words. He became a little agitated, and when Rukmi again challenged Balaram, he made a bet of 100,000 gold coins. Fortunately, this time Balaram won. Although Balaramaji had won, Rukmi, out of his cunningness, began to claim that Balaram was the loser and that he himself had won. Because of this lie, Balaramaji became most angry with Rukmi. His agitation was so sudden and great that it appeared like a tidal wave in the ocean on a full day, full moon day. Balaram's eyes are naturally reddish, and when he becomes agitated and angry, his eyes become more reddish. This time he challenged and made a bet of 100 million coins. Again, Balaram was the winner according to the rules of chess. But Rukmi again cunningly began to claim that he had won. Rukmi appealed to the princes present, and he especially mentioned the name of the king of Kalinga. At that time, there was a voice from the air during the dispute, and it announced that for all honest purposes, Balaram, the actual winner of this game, was being abused. Now, the statement of Rukmi that he had won was absolutely false. In spite of this divine voice, Rukmi insisted that Balaram had lost. And by his persistence, it appeared that he had death upon his head. Falsely puffed up by the ill advice of his friends, he did not give much importance to the oracle. And he began to criticize Balaramaji. He said, "My dear Balaramaji, you two brothers, cowherd boys only, may be very expert in tending cows, but how can you be expert in playing chess or shooting arrows on the battlefield? These arts are well known only to the princely order." Hearing this kind of pinching talk by Rukmi, and hearing the loud laughter of all the princes present there, Lord Balaram became as agitated as burning cinders. He immediately took a club in his hand and without any further talk, struck Rukmi on the head. From that one blow, Rukmi fell down immediately and was dead and gone. Thus Rukmi was killed by Balaram on that auspicious occasion of Aniruddha's marriage. These things are not very uncommon in Kshatriya society. And the king of Kalinga, being afraid that he would be the next to be attacked, fled from the scene. But before he could escape even a few steps, however, Balaramaji immediately captured him. And because the king was always showing his teeth while criticizing Balaram and Krishna, broke all his teeth with his club. All of his teeth. The other princes who were supporting the king of Kalinga and Rukmini were also captured, and Balaram beat them with his club, breaking their legs and hands. They did not try to retaliate, but thought it wise to run away from the bloody scene. During the strife between Balaram and Rukmini, Lord Krishna did not utter a word, for he knew that if he had supported Balaram, Rukmini would be unhappy. And if he said that the killing of Rukmi was unjust, then Balaram would be unhappy. Therefore, Lord Krishna was silent on the death of his brother-in-law, Rukmi, on the occasion of his grandson's marriage. He did not disturb either his affection relationship with Balaram or with Rukmini. After this, the bride and bridegroom were ceremoniously seated on the chariot, And they started for Dwarka, accompanied by the bridegroom's party. The bridegroom's party was also protected by Lord Krishna, the killer of the Madhu demon. Then they left Rukmi's kingdom, Bhojakata, and happily started for Dwarka. Thus end the Bhaktivedanta purports the second volume, 26th chapter of Krishna, the genealogical table of the family of Krishna. We could go on for hours. We can if we want. What time is the Abhishek supposed to be?
10:30.
Aarti is a quarter to 11.
No, at least a quarter to 11.
Really? And what time is the offering?
Offering is around 12:00. 12:30 is
enough. So, okay. Anyway.
I'm not sure how long time it will take to decorate.
Why don't you have Abhishek at 11?
11?
Then we can do some more reading at 10:30.